Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:18 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is October 12th, and today was a day really made by highlights or by headlines, and certainly one of those was Bitcoin, where it surged through that 5,000 point level, dollar level, I should say, and it's up almost 10%. So this is a pretty emphatic breakout, but most people look at the chart in an arithmetic scale, and an arithmetic scale is generally what we look at in terms of most assets because they're heavily influenced by leverage. But while the SEC has permissioned options on Bitcoin and indeed Ethereum, they haven't been released yet, and therefore it is more appropriate to look at something like Bitcoin on a logarithmic scale, because that gives us a percentage move look, which is really what the people that own Bitcoin are looking at, because the vast majority of them are unleveraged. And if we look at Bitcoin on a logarithmic scale chart, well, then we're presented with a rather different environment. What it looks like, in fact, is a staircase step sequence uptrend. That just in the last year, we have four steps, and there are a number of consistency characteristics. The first is that you have one step above another, that by and large, that when you get these rather swinging pullbacks, and it is prone to swinging pullbacks, but it is also prone to accelerations higher, and usually we get the big pullback after an acceleration higher, that every breakout has been sustained, and when it breaks out, it moves up in a pretty dynamic manner, and then it pulls back and finds support in the region of the previous peak, which would suggest that if this pattern is going to be repeated, then we can anticipate that Bitcoin will rally spectacularly again from here, then experience a sharp pullback just like it did in August. Then we can anticipate that it will bounce emphatically, because that's what it's done previously on every one of those big pullbacks, and then it should move on to additional high ground and sustain this staircase step sequence uptrend. So that's, of course, if this trend is going to remain consistent. If the pattern is going to be repeated, then that will confirm that this is a consistent trend, and a consistent trend is a trend in motion. So since we know what the consistency characteristics are, then we can also begin to think about what would characterize a loss of consistency. Well, certainly a failed upside break would be an inconsistency. It would suggest that the vacuum of supply above the market has not formed, and that then there is potential for a more lengthy period of consolidation, a bigger pullback, and potentially even a break in that step sequence uptrend. So that is, I think, an important point to bear in mind, that if we know what the consistency characteristics are, then we can pretty much sketch out what the ending may look like. This was also a rather important day for the pound, because in the early part of the day, the Chancellor was castigated for not being more eager to plan or to spend money in planning for a hard Brexit. And he is still willing to wait for the negotiations to run their course and is planning for a transition agreement. And then later in the day, Michel Barnier, the EU negotiator, hinted that they are willing to countenance a transition agreement, because they understand that that is perhaps one of the only ways they're going to be able to get the money they feel they're owed from the UK. So that then resulted in the pound reversing an earlier decline. And if we look at it over the last year, it has held this progression of high reaction lows. It did get quite overbought when it got up towards that 135 area, and then 136 area, then it pulled back very sharply, and now it is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. And provided it continues to hold in the region of the trend mean and holds that progression of higher reaction lows really evident since late last year, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, and that would suggest that we are back in a demand-dominated environment for the UK, which from just a very basic look at it would suggest that the market is willing to believe that the UK is in a better position. And of course it is being it has the tailwind of the expectation that the UK will be among the first countries to raise interest rates, certainly in Europe, and follow what the US has been doing. Now if we look at 2-year gilts, they are at 47 basis points, but I think more important than that is that they did nothing at all from all the way between 2016 and the middle of 2017. Then they broke higher, pulled back to the region of the trend mean, broke higher again, and have been relatively steady. This is different to that persistent decline that we saw all the way from 2014 lower, and it would suggest that we're in a different environment. And of course, a move above 1% would categorically suggest that the interest rate environment has changed, not simply in the short term, but in the medium term. Now, we're still quite away from that, but it is looking increasingly likely that interest rates are going to be moving up from here rather than downwards. And if we look at, for example, the FTSE 100, then it has moved above that 7,500 level. It has bounced pretty impressively from the region of the trend mean and has broken the progression of lower rally highs since the middle of this year, and it is looking increasingly likely that it is going to be able to hold this break above the psychological 7,000, and that this is a new bull market for the FTSE 100, which has one of the most international focuses of any international index. But if we look at the AIM 100, which is the small caps and obviously much more domestically focused, then it had an explosive breakout at the beginning of this year, which gave way to a more moderate pace of advance, but the most important point is that it is still advancing. It has still got this progression of higher reaction lows, and it continues to break to new highs, which suggests that these smaller companies are benefiting from the depreciation in the pound that has already occurred, and that any strength that has come through so far is not too much of a headwind for them. When we cast our eyes at the strongest economy in Europe, the German DAX index is back testing its peak. It did move very briefly to a new high in here today. It wasn't quite able to hold it, but this continues to represent a bullish consolidation in the region of the previous peak in 2015, and really a sustained move below 12,000 would be required to even begin to question that this isn't a generally bullish environment. And if we look at, for example, the mid caps in Germany, then they have outperformed the DAX in pretty robust fashion and continue to extend the advance up to new highs that they put in last week. Now, when we look beyond some of the better performing economies, I think it is also worth considering that the Portuguese market, which is out there on the western periphery and doesn't seem to get a lot of coverage, has a rather attractive chart pattern. Now that it has broken that 3-year downtrend, it has bounced from the region of the trend mean, it is at a new recovery high, and despite the fact that this is really a very small market, it is not expensive compared to where the prices were in the early part of this century. And then when we think about the fact that the ECB is in there buying bonds, it is doing everything it can to support the European economy, and that we still have very low interest rates, and that while there is speculation the UK might be raising them, there is very little prospect that the ECB is going to be doing anything at all. And I think that when we think about what's happening with the euro, I think it is beginning to to pause here. Now, it has bounced, and so far this has been a relatively orderly consolidation in the region of 120, and it would have got at least some support today from the fact that the Catalonians have decided not to go for independence, that they have pulled back when they had the potential to really push the envelope. They have pulled back from it. That all this talk about a revolutionary talk has given way, and I think part of the reason that Greece wasn't able to break out of the EU, and that Catalonia hasn't been able to break out of France, and the fact that the UK has, there is a I think a very there are two important points. One is that the UK has not yet been successfully negotiated its way out of the EU, and we don't know how long the transition agreement is going to last. But generally speaking, we get revolutions when there is a surfeit of young people, and both Greece and Spain do not have a lot of young people. Therefore, the people that are calling for independence are generally less risk oriented. There is a significant proportion of people are worried about their pensions. I think that is part of the reason as well that the Scottish were not able to get their independence vote passed because there were people worried about their pensions. And you need young people to really drive a revolution, and unfortunately, Europe just doesn't have any. So they have demographic problems that are mounting and that are certainly going to represent an issue at some point in the future, but it probably does put a cap on revolutionary fervor when push comes to shove. That what we might then conclude instead that this rise in populism, this rise in support for alternatives, is more a reflection of a refusal to accept the status quo, or a castigation of the status quo, rather than an outright vote for something that is very uncertain. It doesn't mean that we're going to have a very stable environment in terms of politics, but it is probably something that the EU is glad of, that it can hold it together. But it doesn't mean, of course, that the EU can do nothing at all. They're going to have to do something to deal with all of these revolutionary, or at least attempted revolutionary movements that are cropping up all over the EU. And the status quo simply hasn't worked. But what it does mean is that the ECB is probably going to be one of the last central banks to raise interest rates. And the Nikkei continues to extend its advance. It's almost up now to, well, in fact, it moved to a new high in here today and is testing the region of the 2015 peak. Now, it is a little bit overbought in the short term. And but there is the also important fact that not only do we have quantitative easing going on in Japan, but the central bank is also buying stock, and the largest pension fund is buying stock, and these represent pretty powerful tailwinds for the market. And the Japanese market is trading at a pretty attractive price to book ratio, so that also is a tailwind for the index. But it really is worth just having some consideration of just how long this market has been going sideways for, and the fact that 20,000 has been a psychological area of resistance since 1992, and that really is a very long time. I was in secondary school in Ireland when in 1992, so certainly there are a lot of people in the market have absolutely no institutional memory of a bull market in Japan. But if it can sustain the move above 20,000, then we would have to conclude that we are back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the short term, and potentially even beyond the medium term, that it could be a secular bull market unfolding in Japan. And that is something that would be really quite different. It's also noteworthy that the Indian market is pushing back through the 10,000 level. It was up in a reasonably robust manner in here today. This has been really quite an orderly consolidation in the region of this psychological 10,000 level, and the rupee has firmed up. So it is back around the 65 area that the dollar's advance has not been improved upon, and it is now back testing the region of the trend mean. Additional strength in the rupee would almost certainly result in the Nifty breaking higher from here. Now the Indians do not want to have the strongest currency in the world, but perhaps the more important point is that it is unlikely that the rupee is going to be collapsing from here. And if you have just currency market stability, then that lends some support and confidence to international investors that they can re-engage with the Indian market once more. So what happens with the rupee is important, but the signs are relatively benign right now. And the Chinese renminbi has been really quite volatile of late, and it appreciated pretty spectacularly in the first few days of the week, and the end of last week. But perhaps the more important point is that when we look at it on a weekly basis, that the dollar's uptrend against the renminbi has been broken, and that it had trended higher for about 3 years, and we have seen a substantial appreciation in the renminbi in the first half of this year. It unwound much of the oversold condition, or the dollar unwound much of its oversold condition, but now we are in a period of consolidation once more, and that probably the more likely scenario is that we're going to get some ranging between 6.4 and 6.6. And really will need to sustain a move above the trend mean to confirm a return back to dollar dominance. The Chinese do not want to have any questions asked about the integrity of the currency ahead of the Congress, the Communist Party Congress on the 18th. So Beijing is in lockdown, and that would suggest that there probably isn't a great deal to be concluded from big moves in the market between now and pretty much the end of the month. After that, we'll have greater visibility on who's in the Politburo, who's in the Standing Committee, what the priorities are for the next 5 years, and who, in fact, will be carrying out those priorities. But in the meantime, there isn't a great deal of visibility. What we certainly know is that they do not want to have the embarrassment of an extremely volatile move in the stock market, and the banking sector has been pretty inert this week. And that is, of course, following the cut to the reserve requirement that happened during the Golden Week holiday at the beginning of the month. And Australia is also worth keeping an eye on, because it has been incredibly inert for much of the last 6 months. And if you look at it on a weekly basis, the number of times in fact, I can't see a time in the last decade where the ASX 200 has done so much of nothing for so long. It's completely out of character with the volatility, or the customary volatility of the index. And it has rallied on consecutive days to get up to 5,800. Now, there are questions about I think on the one hand, we know, for example, that we are in a period of synchronized global economic expansion, and Australia is a major commodity exporter, and that the materials index is increasing in terms of the weighting in the overall market, which is decreasing what had been a very overweight position in the financials, just by virtue of the fact that the materials sector is growing. But foreign debt as a percentage of GDP is over 50% in Australia now. So we know also that the government has been funding itself by borrowing debt overseas. So that is a potential problem for future. But the question at the moment is whether that is a problem now. and whether that problem outweighs the potential for additional upside in a period of synchronized global economic expansion. And we have had a pretty impressive rebound, and it's quite similar to what we had back in June. So now it is the big question is the ASX going to sustain a move above 5,800? Because if it can, well, then that would suggest that we're in for another up leg. And considering that, the number of markets internationally that are breaking on the upside is really rather high. Whereas I can't think of any that are making meaningful new lows. So that would suggest that the ASX has the potential to rally at least up towards 6,000 and potentially even more than that, considering that if we are in the latter stages of a cyclical advance, then commodities should do well, and that could even push it back up to the highs seen really all the way back there in 2007. And it looks better supported on this occasion than it was when it got all the way up there last time. So I think Australia is becoming an increasingly interesting market, and not least because the Australian dollar has begun to firm from the region of the trend mean, and it was up about 30 ticks in here today. But it's not just the trend mean, but it's also the upper side of that underlying trading range. It has a striking similarity to some of the mining indices that we see in the UK or Australia or in Canada, that we see pretty similar patterns, and most particularly if we redenominate a number of those commodity-related indices into a common currency like the US dollar. So I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.